Hey, Pernessos, we've got Matt at Team Outfitters based out of Ontario, Canada, joining us today. He bought a shop about 4 years ago and has grown it just about 4x from where it was. And he's going to share how. So he had a marketing company before, and he's really built out a lot of processes to be able to scale and grow in his local community. Not only that, we chatted on AI tools. So he's using AI to do a lot of reporting things. And I really like that because we've been diving heavy into ChatGPT too. Just as like, how does this help you save time? So he shares some real examples that he uses every single day and what he has his team run for analytics wise to help him run his shop. So we'll get into that. But first, the amazing partners that help us put the show in every single week are, first up, GraphX Source. GraphX offers industry-leading outsourcing option for your shop by truly becoming part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management softwares, which help improve your efficiency and reduce costs in your art department. So they handle SEPs, mockups, creative art, digitizing, back office admin, and customer service. Not only that, they've been around for 40 plus years. Mention PrintavoPod24. PrintavoPod24, that gets you 50% off your first vector, SEP, or digitized order. All right, $250. That is what Easy Way is giving away every single month in product credits. So sign up, easyway.com/giveaway. Each month, they're giving away a $250 prize. Easy Way, you guys know, they make reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their chemicals and equipment. Make sure, check it out, easyway.com/giveaway to get that $250 credit giveaway. Stalls. Ready to take your custom apparel to the next level? Stalls is the leader in heat printing solutions. Use the code HUSTLER20 to get 20% off your next DTF transfer order. Hustler20, they've got some really cool stuff. I was just at Campus Inc's office and I was looking at the heat applied products for caps. And it was amazing seeing all the different types of heat applied products that you could sell and that people could see. Super, super cool. They've got equipment transfers and support for your business. Head to stalls.com. That's Hustler20, 20% off your order. Last but not least, Multicraft Daddy. If you need ink supplies or Daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years have been providing you with top brands at competitive pricing with incredible Instagram videos. Follow him, Multicraft_Daddy, for the best industry videos. They are absolutely unbelievable. And as you know, every month he's giving out cases of PMI tape. Send him a DM. Try it out. PMI Tape Boys will ship it directly to you, or Multicraft Daddy will ship it to you. So thank you, Dave, and the Multicraft team. All right, let's jump into the episode. All right, Matt at Team Outfitters, how are you? How's your August been?
Not too bad, man. It's been hot up here, so it's been kind of a catch-up month for us and kind of getting ready for the fall.
You've got the most beautiful backdrop award, like an awesome backyard or something there.
Yeah, I decided to do an outside one today, so.
That's great. Is this at your shop? Is this outside or at home?
No, at home. Yeah. The shop was a little bit busy. And actually with the growth we've had, I don't have my own office anymore. So we've been kind of sharing offices and that sort of thing. So I thought I'd get some peace and quiet at home here today.
Do you normally spend more time at home during the week or are you always there?
Always there. Yeah.
Are you using any of the AI tools or anything AI related in your day to day?
ChatGPT daily. That's probably the number one. Played around with some of the other stuff. Everything from data analysis to even developing emails, social media posts, everything like that. The data
what
analysis.
What kind of data analysis?
Exporting Printavo data and then having it spit out reports and create templates for me like that for a variety of applications. It's been fantastic for that.
Wow. So like, what's an example question? By the way, I built a, I'll have to share a link with you or anyone else. You can email me to get it, but I built a, what's called a GPT, which is like a custom one that's just based on Printavo data. So it just knows the columns pretty well and allows you to make it easier to ask it questions without having to train it on, you know, this column is for this, this is for that, this is the default and so on.
What I've done is I've created kind of a template that takes your data, cleans it up. And then I say, here's the template, here's the raw data, take this raw data and give it to me in this template. And it seems to work pretty good most of the time.
Whoa. Okay. So what's an example question you've recently?
Yep. If I want to track a couple things. So we do for tracking jobs by salesperson, for example, where we found with Printavo, we can have an account manager attached to a client and account manager attached to a project. But if I want to kind of get a more high level overview, if the account manager is attached to a project or a client and somebody else adds a project to that, an invoice to that one, I can kind of clean it up and merge it and say, Bruce is responsible for this client, this sale, even though Matt entered it for him. This is kind of attached to Bruce as well. So,
but like in that one, what are you trying to solve for? Is it like who's doing the best sales wise?
That and yeah, just kind of examining who's responsible for what level of sales and what level of customer. We have some other deals we've done for referral bonuses, like referral kickbacks and stuff like that. So if somebody referred a client to us, we tag it and then I can generate a report that says, you know, this Bruce referred these clients, so I can make sure I pay him a referral fee every month, sort of based on it. That's one application. Another one we're doing is current month sales and projected next month sales, which is kind of a deviation off Nick. I forget his last name. I apologize. You had him on here with the Print Profit software.
Yeah, Nick G at printprofit.com.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we demoed his software. It was incredible. It just, to me, it didn't quite fit for what we were after, but we were able to get some ideas from that and then use some data that was within Printavo, tie it into ChatGPT and give us some numbers and some projections based on what our current month sales are going to be and what our next month sales are going to look like.
And, okay. So how do you use that to predict next month sales based on, like, is it looking at previous year too, or?
No, I just look at like what's in front of us today and it's based on statuses basically, because it doesn't allow me to separate orders from quotes when I export the data, but I can say, take this list of jobs, disregard these 10 statuses that aren't committed job statuses and tell me what the total is. So, you know, my general manager, she does that every month, every week for me and gives me an update on here's what we're projecting for this month, next month, and so on and so forth based on committed sales within a specific status. Yep.
Got it. Okay. And that's what you're using to help predict, okay, are we doing okay next month or are things looking a little slow?
What do we have committed job value wise based on, you know, what's in the system right now?
So how do you use that data? So let's say, all right, things are looking a little bit on the slower end for next month. What do you think about next?
We're always thinking about what, like our kind of core sales strategies. So we call large order follow-ups, where we do go back from this time, say next Q4 of last year, who bought what when. Let's make sure we're following up with them now to get the conversation started and get the job happening so that it shows up in Q3 or 4. That's happening almost weekly. We try to make it happen any weekly. We've implemented this client re-engagement protocol or status that we kind of go back and look at, okay, Bruce bought hats from us and he bought jackets from us, but he's never bought t-shirts. So let's maybe be proactive in outreach and say, hey, Bruce, hope things are going well. Have you ever thought about buying t-shirts? And kind of having that conversation that way. That's kind of core, we try to build into it anyway, core sales strategies all the time. Yeah. The number that we're generating is to help me sleep at night, to be honest with you. I know what our minimum overhead needs to be. I know what our nut is on that. So when I see us crossing that line, I can sleep a little better. Or if I know we're projecting, like in September, if we're already projecting halfway there, we should have no issues hitting the numbers we need to hit. That was one of the big things that I was trying to solve here this year, is how do we be a little bit more proactive to be able to sleep better at night, knowing that we're on track, or if we're completely off track, let's get to business now to fix it before it's too late, sort of thing.
When you look at sales projections for next month, are you saying, you know, not every estimate closes. So is there 80% of this number?
I don't even look at quotes. I look at the committed jobs. So
this is like sort of an in progress going through approvals and so on.
And if a quote gets approved between this week and next, it won't show up this week, but it'll show up next week.
Fascinating. And what about estimates then too? Because you could technically look at, okay, our pipeline, for example, you know, is looking like, all right, 100,000 for next month so far. How much are we potentially able to close of that, or how do we close more of that, or right? Because a couple more jobs every single week can really add up.
Yep. And it'd just be taking kind of the scripting we've developed for ChatGPT to say, pay attention to these statuses, but not the bulk of them, or only pay attention to those statuses. Like we have 60 some statuses on our Printavo. I just checked that today. So it's a little bit involved to get it to where it needed to be off the start, but now it's just copy and paste every month.
Gotcha. That is really, really cool. One of the things Stephen and I was playing around with the AI, like ChatGPT data import thing, was comparing last year's top customers to this year's top customers and who is below. And this thing cranks that information out within 20 seconds, which is crazy. So we were like, okay, the top, you know, 20 customers who are down in sales this year and their associated sales reps, give me that output. Average order by month, give me that for this year and compare it to last year so we could start to see a comparison there. So those trend lines were fascinating.
That's within the AI you've built that ties into Printavo?
That is within the GPT, yeah, which is, you know, you export all of your orders for a given time frame and you give it the file, the CSV file to the GPT, which is just, you know, if you're new to AI stuff, you just go to ChatGPT.com. Literally, that's it. And you can use Printavo Analytics Bot, it's called, and I can link you to it. And then you can upload it and start asking those questions. But sometimes the reason why I ask you is because it's like, whoa, this is a whole new frontier. What could I ask, right? Like you, because you haven't had this tool. So it's like, well, what do I do with this tool, right? I'm holding it, but I'm not sure where do I use it.
And that's probably where Nick's software kind of forced us to look at things a little differently. And it was great to kind of open up those ideas. And then we just kind of took them and ran. So
yeah, that's pretty
his
cool.
His software is pretty great how it does it all for you. It's fantastic in terms of how it just automatically syncs it and does all that. But again, just the where we're at right now didn't make sense. We thought we could do maybe a dumbed down version and just pick two or three key elements that we want to work with and go from there. There was a lot of information on that on Nick's thing that you could really get lost in the data too.
It's powerful. Printprofit.com if you guys want to check it out. You're in Ontario, Canada. You said you're part of Fabric, which is how we met as a member of that community. And you said we're based in a small farming community. And so my immediate thought was, you know, so many shop owners are probably 80% or so is very locally driven sales wise, right? So if you've got a smaller audience, yet you've also said that you've been able to 4x over, you know, almost 4 years. How do you grow outside of your local community?
We grew within our local community, to be honest with you. I just actually fact checked that because I never get this right, but we're based out of Sarnia, Ontario. Population, as of AI is telling me, is 72,000 and change. We service the city, but then also the rural market around it. And that was my background. Like I had a marketing company prior to this for 17 years. And we built a strong customer base in the rural market. We were based in the county. We weren't even based in the city here. So we were able to kind of leverage those relationships as well as what was the foundation of Team Outfitters when we purchased it to really just capitalize on a need that was in the market that really wasn't completely being fulfilled. So.
Got it. And I want to talk about that marketing company then first. This is what you were running beforehand buying your shop. First of all, what types of marketing? Is it like digital marketing or all types or?
All types. So we built it to be able to be kind of like a single source solution for local businesses. We had an in-house digital print shop, paper, you know, postcards, brochures, that sort of thing. We had in-house signage, vehicle graphics, signs, that type of thing. We did web development. We had a developer on staff. We did social media marketing. We had a team around that. Graphic design, branding. We did some promotional products and apparel, which is kind of what dovetailed us into this. But we grew that company from me and a business partner in a basement to 24 employees over the course of, you know, 17 years. Me and my business partner split off early on in that. But worked with national clients, worked with some big guys all across the country. But to be honest, I almost got bored of it. We were at a point that the next step for growth on that was going to be pretty difficult being in a local market. Like some of the local businesses really didn't value social media marketing and higher end web development as much as some of the big city type clients. So I just felt like we kept hitting a brick wall in terms of where we could go with that thing. Through that, and then again, working, we offered some promotional products and some apparel. I bought 2 single head embroidery machines because we had a spot on our production floor that just needed something. So I said, let's try it. It went over really well. We kind of had an idea of let's just service a dozen or 2 dozen clients and just do hats. We're in a rural community. People love hats. We could probably just do this as a one more piece of the equipment that'll just keep doing its thing in the background. Well, that took off quickly and it became jackets and polos and that sort of thing. And then we decided, okay, let's start doing DTG. So we talked to local guys, got hooked up with the DTG machine, ended up being the biggest waste of money I've ever spent in my entire life. But through that, I kind of had that idea of, you know, this isn't fulfilling me enough. I need to find something different. Apparel seems to be something here. So we had a conversation. I started a conversation with the guy, local guy that owned this company before me. He's had the company for almost 30 years. It took about 2 years of conversations. I wouldn't say he was eager to sell when I first approached him, but over time and over COVID, it kind of came to the point where he was ready to move on and we were ready to make a move. And that's kind of where it all started.
Interesting. And the marketing business and sounds like the signage and everything else going on there, you still operate that?
No, we finally scaled it. We wrapped it up completely about 3-4 months ago. I sold the building finally. Tried to package it up as one big unit, not a whole lot of interest. So we end up piecing it off. Our print company, we were able to kind of make a deal with one of our biggest customers to bring their production in house. So they purchased all the equipment actually, as well as hired one of the employees that we had for that. Our web development side, I actually made a deal with the web developer that we had on staff. He started his own company so that those customers could move on with him and maintain those relationships. The social media side, again, a staff member, we kind of set her up and got her going and she took it and ran. And then we took a few of the employees over to team. We had to part ways with a few and basically just finally cut the cord and sold the building. And now we're all in.
And was the building, why sell the building versus try to rent it out?
That was a thought. What I truly found trying to do both, and I thought I could do both for a while, I was spread way too thin and couldn't give either enough attention. So I kind of, that was when both businesses were operating. When it come time to make a decision on the building, I kind of was in the same boat. Like we own 2 other buildings in town for Team Outfitters for the production side of it, maintenance, upkeep, like all the overhead that comes with it. I really didn't want to have to babysit another tenant and, you know, lawn care and snow removal and bitching and complaining that I thought, let's just cut this loose so we can be all in, focus all in one direction and go here. And it's working out so far anyway. So
makes sense. When you were looking, you know, and buying another business to get more focus on the apparel and embroidery side, I know you were kind of dabbling buying the embroidery machines. What were you looking for, something more specific, right? Because you had experience running this business before and you could probably say, yeah, this is the type of business I want to run or look into building. Because this is what I did or didn't do correctly in the previous one.
I wouldn't say there was something specific. I think it was just what was available. There was 2 or 3 companies in town here. We had a friend of a friend that introduced me and the former owner, Dave. It seemed like the way he built his company was how I operate too, like strong relationships, strong emphasis on customer service, a great team behind him that as soon as I started the conversations with him, it just felt right. Felt like this is a great synergy. This probably is going to be a nice transition if it ever happens. And again, it took a couple of years to make it happen, but it was the right size. Like I've purchased businesses in the past, little, you know, single operators that we kind of merged their company into ours. They weren't needle moving things, where this I knew could be a needle moving thing just because it was such the next step in terms of the size. It was a point that it wasn't, you know, a $10 million company that we couldn't afford either. It was something that just kind of worked out. And I would say it was more luck than anything that this introduction could happen and that the synergies were as close as they are.
What do you feel like you know, as much as you could say, what do you mean by the right size? Is it that there was people in place to start handling processes? Is it, you know, there was enough margin for you to start taking a good salary and start working? Or, you know, what do you mean by that?
Salary had nothing to do with it. That was the last of my thoughts here. I think it was the production capacity, the number of solid clients, like really valuable type clients. And I think the other piece of it, which I really underestimated, was the potential for additional growth. Like I never in a million years thought we'd be able to grow this big, this fast. But as we got deeper into it, it's like, yeah, there's some great opportunities within this. The big one, I know you mentioned size, but the big thing was the reputation. Like I did a lot of homework on this, and everybody in town put these guys on a pedestal because of the quality of work, the quality of service. Like coming in at that level made it easy right out of the gate in terms of, instead of having to try to rebuild a bad reputation or something. But back to the original question about size, I think it was just that, like the number of employees, the number of clients, the number of headaches, like it really, there was a few, but it wasn't crazy when we got in the door. So, and I thought I could do both. That was the other piece. I really thought I could manage both of them effectively, which it turned out I couldn't.
Was there any red? So we've had a few folks on who have talked about buying or merging with companies, and they wanted to trust their gut because I think all of us are super optimistic, right? And I almost feel like this is sort of like hiring in a way where you're kind of searching for red flags so that you're either aware and you can handle and manage it, or it scares you off and move on in a different direction. Steven built this awesome due diligence checklist that you guys can see a link in the description to see as well, that I think helps break down all the questions to start asking to dive deeper. But were there any red flags that you came across that, you know, didn't kill the deal, obviously, but it was something to be aware of that you were able to handle?
Not leading up to, even looking back, the biggest thing I learned that we should have done more homework on is work in progress and how we handle that. Meaning when I jumped into the business, there was a little bit of discussion. I'm not even going to say argument because we were able to sort it out quickly. But if we would have spent a little more time and a little more due diligence talking about that, of you own the company when these jobs started, but I own the company when they finished. Who's responsible? Who gets credit? Who gets the payment for that? And how is it going to look? And it got a little bit messy, but again, we were able to clean it up. But that was the one thing I learned that I would preach is really be crystal clear on what happens to that work in progress from the day you turn the key.
How do you think, if you were to go back, how do you think is the best way to advise someone on handling work in progress?
My opinion, if it's finished and billed when I'm there, it's mine. If you paid for the goods, I'll pay for those goods so that it's completely mine, sort of thing. Or you make an agreement of, you know, we have 50,000 in the pipeline. We're going to put 25 of that towards the purchase price, and then we just carry on that merry way.
Got it. So it's based on an invoice date, essentially.
The invoice date is what I would say anyway, because it gets really murky after that.
And then purchasing the blanks and that way you could.
If the other person had the responsibility and the burden of purchasing the break, that has to be reconciled somewhere. I respect that. So
yeah, that's pretty cool. That makes a lot of sense. So you having ran a marketing company before, having, you know, scaled processes and done that, you must have seen upside with this business where it was like, yeah, I mean, you know, you talk about being in a community of 70,000 or so. I've done this before. I've got the right people I know how to do, probably can reach, you know, I know a little bit more about marketing to be able to reach people. What were some of those things where you, like, you got pretty excited about early on because you knew you could take advantage of it?
They didn't have a website. There was step one. In 2021, they didn't have a website.
No website, maybe no phone number, didn't answer the phone number. All right. Low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, had a Facebook page with about 3 posts. So we started pouring fuel on that fire pretty quickly. That's external. Internal, it was still paper processes. It was Excel files. It was black and white printers, like even to the point where work orders were printed in black and white. And if something needed to be red, there was a label red with a pointing there and orange pointing there. So I bought a color printer. Little things like that were the easy lifting. I purchased the business in October. by June, we had implemented Printavo, and that's when everything changed. That's when all the processes locked in. We stress tested. We got buy-in from the group that was there. I thought that may be a little difficult, but they were all eager to try some new things. Especially my lead screen printer, Sean, him and I went through a lot of the step-by-step processes and really dialed it in so we could get the screen printing on tack. And then everything else kind of fell in line after that. Those were kind of the high level.
How'd you earn the trust of the team coming in? You know, oh, hey, it's this new guy. I'm sure they were established for quite some time before. They're probably a bit worried. Like, they're on edge right out of the gate. What did that look like?
I'd have to have them answer it, but I think I showed them I'm going to work my ass off for this company. Like, I put in some incredible hours. I worked right beside them on a lot of major projects. Like, I wasn't just going to sit in my office with my feet up. I'm going to get down and dirty. I still can't say I've screen printed too many shirts in my life, maybe two. But I've been in the pit washing screens. I've been there till 9, 10 o'clock pressing numbers on jerseys. I've been there with them, showing them that I'm serious about this and we're going to try to do some cool new things with this. And they bought in at that point in time, and they've been just an incredible group to kind of go forward with since then.
That's cool. Okay. Let's talk about systems and processes. And then I like to get into some of the marketing stuff, but what were the first few, I mean, you talk about getting Printavo, but like, you know, technology is great if there's an efficient process. Like, there needs to be work on the improving, you know, the flow of order processes or the micro systems people are doing. What were the few couple big systems improvements? So, or even was it just documenting some of the existing ones so that it was more repeatable?
Yeah, I don't think a lot of the systems and processes were in place. They were just really cumbersome. The way that we had to print everything and file it. And like, I kept the status quo for the first few months, made minor improvements here and there, but I wanted to fully understand and learn how this works so that we could continue to modify and improve. And we did a lot of research before we went into Printavo. We tried a lot of, tested out a few different software options and whatnot. And ultimately, it was kind of taking what we had and then just putting it digital, I guess. Like, the way that paper would move from this place to this place would be the status from that status to this status. Like, it wasn't a crazy dramatic shift. It was just pulling what we already had and streamlining it in one place. So,
got it. Okay. What about documenting the SOPs? Because, you know, someone quits, you want to bring someone else on that's new. I mean, it's so much work. It's almost daunting thinking about documenting all that stuff. And, you know, the more statuses you have, and it's just so many steps. Did you spend time doing that too?
Oh, still haven't. That's probably where we're definitely lacking. I think the training process that we bring new staff in is sit here and watch me for a few days, jump in, try it. We'll start critiquing and kind of learn as we go, sort of thing. Absolutely, a more a documented process. We had some documented stuff at CR, the last company, but I think just to me, spending the time and overhead on developing those is tough when we're trying to build and grow. And I know that's a terrible excuse. And Leanna, my right hand's going to yell at me for that. But I get the importance of having that. But to me, it's not important. It's not on my radar, which is terrible, but it's what it is. Like, I think we can train them as we go. It's not a crazy complicated system. There's a lot of nuances within it. You're going to learn by failing, and we're going to continue to kind of let you up and build from there.
Yeah, the only time that it forced me to write down SOPs was, well, first of all, I had to lock myself in a room. I was just like, I'm here. I'm spending 4 or 5 hours straight. It was me and another guy, Adam, and we just started writing. We just started everything writing. So I said, okay, if I'm putting myself in the mind of the new hire, what is literally the littlest detail? Okay, bathrooms and, you know, office layout, people, what does each person do? All the different stuff that I could think.
So once it's done, how closely do new hires follow it though? Is it a read it once and then shelf it and ask 800 questions or?
Yeah, it's a good question. Personally, the thought process was if I wanted to document it well enough that they could just read it and I not be there. Now, to your point, that's not the reality. And so, but the goal was for me to use it so that someone else as a manager of a future team could use this to share with them and be able to reference back and forth. And then like, you know, hey, check the doc, right? Because if they keep going, everyone's just going to do whatever's the least friction point is, which is probably ask you, the owner, Matt. And I was like, oh, check the doc. And so that started to point people to that a little bit quicker.
So I'm sure you're, well, I know the business you're in. How relevant were those processes 6 months or a year from now?
It's an ever living doc. I mean, that's the other little trick is, you know, or uncomfortable truth maybe is just that, yes, it has to be always updated. So, oh, we send this to customers now. Okay. Let me put that little detail. And then whoever's starting to do that task, I'll ask them to update it to make sure that it's in there. And it's 80% good, but it has to, it's a living, breathing thing as the company's always changing.
And I'm sure you can attest, like they'd rather do a million other things than sit down and write that. So it's what it is. And I guess when you get to the scale and bringing people in to help with that, I'm not undervaluing the importance of it. I'm right there. To me, it's like nails on a chalkboard telling me to sit down and do something like that.
So. I know. It's the worst. marketing though. So now with all your past marketing experience, you come into this, you said you've been growing a ton, just saturating more of the local community. What do you do?
We're far more visible than we've ever been. We get a lot of credit for the our social media presence. When I branched off the social media component of the marketing company, I actually hired her to market Team Outfitters. And it's worked really well. Like we had a good working relationship prior to, so this has been a pretty easy transition to get her in there, get her. It's almost entirely hands off for me, which is great, where she comes in, she knows where to find the completed product. She shoots it. She makes it look great. I get the approvals, change this, good to go, and it's gone. And I don't have to look at it. So doing that to scale consistently, and that's where I can say without any shadow of a doubt, everybody out there has the best intentions of doing it themselves. It never, ever sticks because you get bored and do something, you get distracted and go another route. But outsourcing it has ensured that we can do it consistently throughout, which has been.
And she's like contract or hourly or something.
Yep,
you contract. Have her for a couple hours.
She has her own company. So it's contract.
Is the goal to post every day? I notice you post a lot, like almost once, twice a day. Is that the thought you think?
It's getting there now. Like I think we were 3 to 4 times a week at some point, three times a week. A combination of static posts and reels and stuff like that. And then I myself would design the salesy type stuff. I'm a graphic designer by trade. I went to school for that. That's helped too a lot, actually bringing this thing to where it needs to go because I can get my hands dirty and do my own things if I need to. Now we are trying to step it up a little bit. So I have her focus on reels. I have an internal staff member taking more pictures because that's one thing we found. Most of our content is completed projects. When we're using the outside company there, she would come and shoot content today that won't be posted until next month. So I was finding some of it was getting a little bit dated. If we get a graduation hoodie in, you know, May or June, and it's not going out till July, we've missed the mark. So now when completed projects come in, I have an internal person that goes and shoots it, same process, gets it all written up. I tweak it, I post it. And by doing this, I hope now to be almost every day of the week to have something go out there.
I think what you guys do, and people, you guys can click on the link in the description to see it, but it's Team Outfitters Sarnia, S-A-R-N-I-A is the handle. But what you guys do that is awesome is these reels are really great. So, you know, anyone that browses Instagram, that's like the, you know, restaurants do it, influencers do it, and they just do these really nice slow panning. Some text over top kind of overlays and talks about it. You guys do this really well. So whether it's like it looks like you've got at a baseball field, you've got a bunch of merch that you guys are selling, different hats. And, but it's very different than just like this shirt we printed.
We have a little bit of that. We have behind the scenes.
Yeah. You have it here, but this is, I mean, I think it stands out more, right? It makes it more interesting versus just the usual stuff.
Well, one that we just launched, it's on there. It's called Proudly Outfitted, where we partner with local clients we work with. We get shots of the product being made, and then we get shots of the product in the business, and that's exploded. That's probably one of our most highly engaged types of content. It's a great relationship builder with our clients too, saying, hey, I want to send my social media girl in there. It's called Proudly Outfitted. There's a few in there. There's a coffee cart and a couple restaurants that we did it with, where we're trying to kind of get on track, do one a month. But it's kind of that value add for clients. We shoot some content for them. We promote them at the same time. It's kind of the cross promotion thing that we do together, and it goes over incredibly well.
Interesting. Okay. So you create some content. It looks like for the merch that you made for this coffee shop, this is a really cool video. The lady you have, it, I'm guessing, made it, edited it together.
Our social media person made it. Yeah. So she shot it on our floor, and then she went out to her business and shot it with her at her business and then put it together like that. So.
And I think the biggest piece is also posting it in, as a collaborator, which means that, you know, you plus others posted it and it goes on everyone's page.
Yeah. And it's probably the most highly engaged content we have right now. And it's fun to do. It gets great. You know, it's a great relationship builder too with clients. So.
Yeah. I always, I feel like the next question people have is like, well, I'm not sure I get any sales from it, from, you know, DMs or something. But I do think regardless of that, it's kind of like when you want to go look at a restaurant, right? Like if I go to a restaurant's page on their Yelp and they have 2 stars or something, like there's these elements of social proofing that make something feel very legit or higher quality. And some videos like this, I think, are right in there.
Yeah, I've done different training. I've done Tony Robbins Business Mastery. I've done Gary V's 4Ds, and I forget which one told us. It was incredible. But I forget which one of them introduces concept, but branding versus selling. Like, I can do selling posts all day. I can promote cheap t-shirts. I can do all that type of stuff. But branding builds a foundation. We always used to preach this at CR, is you invest in branding. It has a lot longer tail than the one sale you're going to launch today. That's going to be done, you know, a week from now, it's going to be forgotten about. This is that consistent stuff we post all the way through. So we're top of mind all the time when it comes to this, not just a one and done sort of thing.
Yeah, that's really cool. What else did you pull from the Tony Robbins one or the Gary Vee one?
They were both awesome. They were a long time ago. Yeah. The Gary V one was when I was still in the marketing company, and we actually, through that, really dove into this branding side. It's probably still on YouTube, but we did a storyteller series, we called, through our CR Creative brand, where, similar to Proudly Outfitted, I would sit down with local business owners and just talk, hear their story, hear their background, not far off what we're doing here. But what that did was get my brand in front of their brand. So we went with notable people in the community that had a, you know, a great reputation and following. So all of a sudden, Bruce's followers now knew who I am. And now they're local companies that we have a better chance of working with and going there and really investing in this branding versus marketing sort of avenue. And that's probably the number one thing I learned through Gary Vee. The Tony Robbins one was a really unique, amazing experience down in Florida for 4 days, where they just, it was like 70 hours of training over 4 days. Like, we were there till 1 a.m. the one day. It was incredible, with 2,000 like-minded individuals, which at the time is what I really needed, is somebody that was in the weeds, that understood what it took to run a business. There was a lot of layers to that entire week that we were there that still stuck with me. I think probably the number one was like the compounding and how well that can work. Meaning, if you increase your customers by 5%, increase the frequency in which they buy by 5%, and increase the value in which they buy by 5%, that's not a 15% increase. That compounds onto each other to be like a 72% increase, or whatever it looks like. By tweaking one or tweaking all of them, you can get some significant growth pretty quickly. And there's a whole module that they trained on that was pretty enlightening.
That's pretty neat. I've seen those and get advertised to them on Instagram, and always wonder.
And we'll say it, like, the whole Tony Robbins, the Kool-Aid, all that sort of stuff, I was a little bit apprehensive going in, but it was game changing. The amount of information you got, the way he delivered it, the networking, all that kind of stuff was, I would highly recommend anybody that's on the fence, go try it. I don't know about virtual. Virtual doesn't really turn my crank, but I did the West Palm Beach thing. This is probably 10 years ago now. And it was pretty awesome. Like, it was something to see.
That's awesome. Okay, last one. Previous episode, we were talking about eMyth Revisited, the thought process of running a business with the end in mind. And so not necessarily like, yeah, I want to sell this thing at some point, but more so, what do I want my life in the business to look like long term? Like, where do I want to go? And it's a tricky question because we get really stuck in just solving daily problems or just getting to the end of the week every week. Have you ever thought about that?
Yes and no. You get the days where screw it, I'm going to retire. And then the days that this is great, I want to do it forever. And then the days where I'm just going to go jump off a bridge and forget all the no. But I think I'm close to where I want to be on this. Like I'm kind of wearing a production manager hat. I'm wearing a little bit of a sales hat with the team there. I think I got about one more step to elevate where I can just focus on what's next. And I'll be set. Like our team is so solid and so great right now that it's fun going to work. It's fun working and collaborating with them. I'm not far off of what I would consider an end goal. I'm never going to retire. I'm always going to have something on the go, but we're close as far as I could say. I think some of the things that we're trying to work on now is just to build a consistent workflow, especially try to level out some of those slow periods, get them up to be a little better than where they're at now, and then trying to just still maintain the busy seasons, which we got one coming up now. So
what do you mean by closest, and where's the gap? I'm just curious, is like the gap from now to, you know, dream scenario. Is it that operational thing that you talk about? So you're not on the production side?
I don't mind being that, but just a little bit further out of the weeds. Like I'm still getting pulled into some of the issues, which again, over another year or so, I can probably train some staff to kind of take over some of that stuff. I've already shed a ton of stuff off my plate in the last year through EOS. Actually, Leanna and I kind of started that process of developing rocks and stuff like that, where we're more strategic on what we're trying to get accomplished and delegate and build processes for and hire for and all that type of thing, that we're really doing a great job at cleaning those up. And I think a few more and I'll be able to kind of sail at this 10,000 foot level and really start to focus on the next step opportunities that are out there. The size, I'm quite content with the size we are. I'm not looking to be the next 4imprint or any of those major things, because I think just the world of headaches that come with that aren't what I'm after. I'm after kind of building a profitable, efficient company with what we have here in place. So,
yeah, that's cool. That's cool. It's interesting to think about. I always feel like no matter what size we got to, I always felt like I was sort of addicted to being in the weeds. Like I wanted to be out of the weeds, but I don't know if I physically could pull myself out unless I actually wasn't there.
Yeah. The growth is the funnest part. Once you get to the top, it gets boring almost. Like it's the challenges. Like that's what I found. And that's probably what moved me from the marketing company over here, is I felt like I've grown this to where I can. I'm really spinning my tires now. Let's go back and start again and grow it again and go what we have here. Now I'm getting older. I don't know if I have it in me to start at the bottom and grow it like that again. But with what we have going here, there's still some upside potential, a lot of upside potential on this that gets fun at this point, I think.
Do you think there is a team size, like an employee size sweet spot?
I like 20 to 24. I don't mind being a little smaller than this too, but yeah, I don't mind this 20, because then you can start to put managers in place. Anything small, like 15 is tough, because then you're really not quite big enough to have middle management or you know, division managers, that sort of thing. And I think 30, you're going to get into that weird spot too, where you may have too many managers that are required that then suck all the profitability. I think 20 is, to me, is a sweet spot that you can really do well and still have some fun with a team of that size. Still be very personable and whatnot with them, right?
That's interesting. Yeah. I remember when we were at 30, it was definitely two managers. I shouldn't say strong. One was strong, one we had to part ways with, but definitely needed another two, but that was pretty expensive to be able to handle, you know, a good sized team, and needed someone more senior to continue pushing it forward. And so, yeah, it was a weird, what they'll call an investment is like J curve, which is like, is, you know, you hope to spend a bit more to then elevate later. But I don't know. I think there's something to that. You're right. The 20 to 25, which is
15 to 25. Yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood. Because I have seen it when you're too small, when you're 12 or 13, you're spread too thin because there's so much to do. And then you don't have the skilled people to do it. You're doing it everything. Yeah, you got nobody to report to. So this size is nice. We have some nice layers and some nice levels that there's still going to be a few people we kind of fill in some gaps on, especially during the heavy seasons. But it's probably where I can't speak to having 50 employees, but I don't mind this level we're at now.
Yeah. I think the only pro, or maybe if it was possible at say 15 being a sweet spot or so, 15 to 20 being a sweet spot, but also having some sort of fractional HR to help recruiting. Cause that was a part that really wears on you is, you know, someone leaves, hiring phone screens or whatever, like the constant churn is difficult. And it's difficult to manage just over time. So maybe if that was the sub in part, because you're probably not big enough to have someone full time, but that was the sub in part, boom, I love it.
We have a great, well, I keep mentioning Leanna. She's my number two in this company. And she does all that for me. She does the HR. She does all that headache stuff as well. She wears a sales manager role to kind of help out. We worked quite closely together on things. But having her in place is the only reason I'm content at this size. Because if I had to do the HR stuff and the time off requests and stuff like that, I would say, yeah, no bueno. I'm not here. I'm not in for that because I want to go focus on what's next and what's new. I don't want to be pulled backwards. So it's nice to be at this size to be able to have somebody like that in place to do it. So
love it. All right. This is Matt at Team Outfitters. If people want to reach out to you via email, are they able to shoot you a note? All right. Matt at teamoutfitters.net. And that'll be in the description.
Give a big plug to Fabric. If you want to join Fabric and reach out to me there, I told Bruce and Steve and
thank you.
Kevin, I've been in it for, I don't even know if it's been a month, maybe a month and a half now. And I absolutely love it. The community is incredible. We had our first meeting last night. It was a great conversation, great problem solving. I can't plug it enough. And just having the connections and the ability to reach out in that group has been, it's a great thing you guys have built here, Bruce. It's fantastic.
Thanks. I appreciate that, man. All right, pronouncers. Thank you guys for showing up to another episode of Pretabo Pronouncers Podcast. We'll see you in the next one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.